introduce our guest speaker today, who's Stevie B from the Westside Men's Group, who's doing step three. Let's welcome Stevie.
Good, buddy.
Good to see you. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Before we start, Joe, didn't your parents pull the plug? Yeah, so they pulled the plug. That's how amazing that story is. If you guys weren't here last week, Joe picked up 2 years. And and he was, you know, pronounced dead, I would imagine. And he's doing much better than that now, I got to tell you. It was quite inspirational. It was quite inspirational to see all the medallions, for you to see you pick up. And it was just a great evening, a wonderful evening, a blessing of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Westside Men's Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's good to be here with you guys. Tonight we're going to be talking about step three. If you're here for the first time, and it seems like a lot of you are here for the first time, last week we spoke about coming to believe. And how we come to believe, not because it says this is something that we have to do in the second step, coming to believe. We come to believe through trial, through error, through God showing up in our life, and from failing and from utter destruction and then doing something different and then Him showing up, then we come to believe. It's much less a step as it is an action in our lives. And if you're new, and I think a lot of the people here are new, this might be the first time you've ever been at a step series, and you might not even think you're an alcoholic. You might have just introduced yourself as an alcoholic because you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I understand that. I totally get that. I mean, I can't go back over the last 3 weeks, but I do want to tell you when I was 22 years old that I entered into my first treatment program, and I did not go into that treatment program for alcohol. I did not have an alcohol problem. I had a drug problem. And I stayed in AA for 7 years. The entire time, I never took a first step with alcohol. What that means is I always believe I was powerless over drugs. I always believe I was powerless over a specific drug. And I always thought that I would never go back to drugs, but I never thought I was powerless over alcohol. If you don't take a first step in Alcoholics Anonymous and thoroughly believe in your innermost self. Oh, that's music to my ears right there. That's beautiful. How old's the baby? Oh, that's Maddie. That's John's baby. Oh, 15 months. Oh, that's so beautiful. Oh, my goodness. What a blessing. I got to meet your son the other day at the Westside Men's Group. He's the newest member. He's the youngest member that's ever been there in the last couple months. He's 15 months. And we spoke about that I never thought I was powerless over alcohol. So in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the 12 and 12, by the way, if you're new or if you haven't seen this, this is the 12 and 12. Very important to have the 12 and 12. Because they're going to give you this book in treatment, which is not. I have big books. But Jerry, show them how small the books can be. Jerry has the small book. So wherever your eyesight takes you, get the book that works for you. But they're going to give you the big book or the not so big book in treatment or in a halfway house. But what they don't usually give you is this. If you don't have the 12 and 12, you need to get it. Because after 15 or so years in Alcoholics Anonymous and people recovering and them seeing what worked and didn't work, and then some of the people that they wrote about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that they said we are 100 that have recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, some of those people relapsed. The people that said they were recovered, they relapsed. Then they figured out some of the things that they were recovered from, they weren't. And then some of the stuff that they realized, then they wrote it in the 12 and 12. So can you do one without the other? People do it without both books. There's places in the country where they do it without God. They do it without the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They do it with a bunch of people getting around and discussing things around the table, and somehow they stay sober. I don't know how that works. But if you want the program, if you want to get into that fourth dimension where you're just so excited, I highly recommend having both books. I go to step series where I'm either sitting there or I'm standing up here and I have both books out. And what's great is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is an older type of text. Some of the words might be a little foreign to you, but the 12 and 12 written in the 50s is you're gonna be able to understand it maybe just a little bit better. Now, I just want to say is that the first 164 pages of the Big Book, the reason this might seem rudimentary to those of us that have been around a long time, but there's a lot of young people in here, so I want them to hear this. The first 164 pages of the Big Book has never been changed in 70-plus years. Never been changed. It works absolutely perfectly. You can all, in my opinion, you could believe every single word of the 164 pages of the Big Book. Every single word. Now, the stories is another thing. Those are people's personal stories. And you could believe that those people believe those stories. And it's awesome. So the entire book, Big Book, if you're in the program of AA, is very important to have. And the 12 and 12 is a working manual. We're going to be going through both of these books over the next 10 weeks or 15 weeks or however long it takes us to get through the step, well, until they throw us out. That's usually how it works. So I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. Never took the first step of alcohol in Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the Big Book, it says that we had to admit to our innermost selves, our innermost self, that we were alcoholics. Our coin that we get, that we receive on medallion nights says, to thine own self be true. At least one of the coins still says that, to thine own self be true. If you don't believe that you're powerless, it's only a matter of time. Maybe 1 year, 5 years, 6 months, 18 years, 26 years. I have a dear friend that's still trying to come back after going out at 24 years or 23 years. One of the pillars in the AA community didn't think he was powerless over drugs now. He came in on alcohol, never took a first step with all substances, and now continues to kill himself after all these years because he only took a first step in alcohol. I believe that anything that I put into my system that affects me from the neck up, I'm powerless over. I want to tell you, and this is a separate, totally separate program, and that includes sugar. Because I eat about 7 of those cookies, and I can't wait till they get to the next place. So, but that's a whole separate meeting. I've never sold myself for cookies. I guarantee you that. That's right, yet. Thank you, Barbara. Yet, exactly. She's always the voice of reason for me. So tonight we're going to talk about step 3. Two places that the 12 and 12 and the Big Book are completely aligned on it is step 3. If you have not been able to take a thorough third step, you will not get the program. But I don't want to summarize it. I just want to read it. Like all remaining steps, this is from the 12 and 12. Like all remaining steps, step 3 calls for action. For it is only by action that we can cut away the self-will, which has blocked the entry of God. Faith, to be sure, is necessary, but faith alone can avail us nothing. In the 12 and 12, it says, faith alone can avail us nothing. In the Big Book, it says, faith without works is dead. Both those lines come from the Bible, the book of James. Step 3 represents our first attempt to do this. In fact, the effectiveness of the whole AA program. You know, when they come up with these type of lines, when they say the whole AA program, or to drink is to die, or there is one, when they come up with these emphatic things, it's worked for 70 years perfectly for those that follow the program. In fact, the effectiveness of the whole AA program, Joe, will rest upon how well and earnestly we have tried to come to a decision to turn our life and our wills over to the care of God. Now, that sounds impressive, and it might even sound ominous. It might sound bigger than us, but I just want to back up, and I wanted to tell you right before that sentence, it says this. We have tried to turn our life and our will over to the care of God. What does that mean? We have tried. It means it takes a lot of work daily. For those of you that don't know what step 3 is, step 3 is made a decision to turn our life, our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. Over to the care of God. To turn our life and our wills over to the care of God. It doesn't seem that hard, that step 3. This is not something where we have to take pen to paper. This is not something where we have to share it with another alcoholic, the things we've done in our entire life, our deepest, darkest secrets. This is just turning our life and our will over to the care of God. And yet, the big book and the 12 and 12 say, unless we effectively take this step, we will not have a program. We will not stay sober. So I want to read this to you. In Bill's story, page 12. Who hasn't read Bill's story in here? Just raise your hand if you have not read Bill's story. Oh, I know. Everyone else read Bill's story. Very good. Excellent. I'm glad we're all on the same page. The entire room has read Bill's story. Fantastic. This is Bill W. we're speaking about. Yeah. On page 12, and they're talking about when Ebby came in to see Bill W., And Bill W., who's still drinking, thinks, there's someone in this room right now tonight here that I drank with. That's Nikki D. right there. I drank with Nikki D. And when I used to see Nikki D., not now, of course, we're in AA together. But when I used to see Nikki D., and I used to see him because he was a drunk and I was a drunk, when we used to see each other, you knew there was some stuff going to happen afterwards. You know, it wasn't like we were going to be talking about powerlessness or God or any of that stuff. We were going to be, you know, we were going to get tight, they say. We're going to get drunk. And so when I would see him and he would see me, we would have a little sparkle in our eye because we knew that in a couple hours or a couple minutes or whatever it is, in the nighttime, we were going to go to the other side. Now, this is what happens with Bill W. He sees Ebby knocking out the door, and he thinks, well, at least we're going to be getting drunk tonight. I mean, things are going terrible. My life is in the toilet. I want to kill myself. I can't stop drinking. But guess what? At least we're going to be getting drunk tonight. And then Ebby comes in, and he's clear-eyed. Man, when you're drinking, that's the worst thing you see. You don't want to see your running buddy clear-eyed. That's not what you want to see. You want to see, because what? Misery? Loves company. Misery loves company. Misery loves company. Am I right? Mate? Does misery love company? Does misery love company? It sure does. So, but on page 11, but my friend sat before me, a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he admitted complete defeat. Then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead. Joe, I wanted to read this tonight because I was thinking of you. He was raised from the... Is it warm in here? It's warm in here, right? It's warm in here. We can turn the AC down, I think. I think we can hit that. We had been raised from the dead. And now I don't mean literally like Joe, but how many people by a show of hands have come back from the jaws of death? Come on, now you can be honest. It's not like the Bill W. story. Jaws of death. My parents were sure I was going to die. Ray's parents were sure he was going to die. And as being the person that was waiting for Nick to come back in, I was sure he was going to die. Most of us in here, we didn't come in, as I said last week, riding the high horse. We're over at the Hard Rock. We're throwing sevens. We got people around us telling us how great we are. Things are going great. We just pay the valet and we're like, tomorrow, I'm going to AA. Tomorrow's my day. Most of us in here have to go really low. A friend of ours spoke tonight about Mike. Mike and Doris, members of this group. Doris had shared her story with our group on Monday night, the group before this, on Monday night at our church, Lighthouse Community Church in Dania on Federal Highway, where we're going to have the funeral. And she spoke about this was the first time that Mike had not been at her talk. And she was amazing. She was amazing because she spoke about how it used to be and how it was now. She spoke about being hopelessly and utterly lost and destroyed and low self-esteem, lost to alcohol most of her life, although successful in her career and raising a family. And she spoke about her partner, who she loved, that she'd been married to for 24 years, missing her first meeting with him while she spoke, and that he had a cold, possibly pneumonia. And then the next night, we were here together last week, and we were speaking of her about praying for her husband, Mike. She happened to be here. Mike wanted to come to the meeting. He asked her if he could come to the meeting. She said, it's probably better if you stay home. Wednesday morning, he wakes up. He can't breathe. He starts bleeding. He dies in her arms. He says, sweetheart, I'm leaving. I love you. Holds his hand up to heaven and goes. In itself, that story is heartbreaking. Our hearts break for our relationship with Mike because he was such a great guy. He had 28 years of sobriety, 28 years of doing the deal. Met his wife early in sobriety, and they've been walking this thing together for 24 years. And he went like that. See, Mike made a decision 28 years ago that he had had enough. And Jerry and myself and those who heard Doris's story on Monday, we realized they didn't come in here riding the high horse. They came in here utterly and tragically destroyed inside. I think it's wonderful that I've had my last drink. And I think it's amazing that I've had my last drug. But let me tell you, I went kicking and screaming. I tried every concoction there was out there. I've tried every different way to do it. I've tried some in the morning, some at night, some in the midnight, some in the 2 o'clock morning, some in the early morning. And I tried every different way and every different potion and every different concoction and every different substance until they all stopped working. But I always had hope that there was one more thing out there. I had always hoped that maybe I started too early at happy hour. And maybe what I needed to do was start a little bit later at the nighttime. Maybe just a, what do we used to call it, a nightcap. Maybe what happened is I started too early, and I needed to wait to the nightcap. The finishing of the night. The problem is my nightcap was an early morning riser. It would start at 10 and finish at 5. I always had that type of a window of opportunity there. And so I came in here utterly destroyed. And if you came in here, or if you just came in here utterly destroyed, what a great place to be. Because we've tried it all. We don't have to go out and try any more controlled drinking. Hallelujah. No more controlled drinking. Man, if you want to talk about that, that is the easier, softer way. To me, this is the easier, softer way. I didn't have to think about at all today, controlled drinking. And the reason I brought up Mike and Doris is because she's been at a meeting every night, as you guys know, every night, including last night. And tonight her family flew in here to be around her. And she wanted you all to know that, as our dear friend said, that on the 27th, which is next Saturday, which is St. Patty's Day, how appropriate. 17th. The 17th. Why did I say another day? 17th. That at 4 p.m. that we're going to have a funeral for, not me, but they're going to have a funeral for him right here in Hollywood, Indiana. But what a way to go. What a way to go. Sober, 28 years, in 5 minutes, gone. I like that for me. First of all, I like going sober. Today, if it's my last day, I go sober. And what we do here in step three, by making a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God, is ensure that today, whatever today's date is, you know, I never know, the 6th, I would imagine. Is it the 7th? 6th, right? The 6th, because someone over here said the 7th. It's the 6th. The 6th. And as Russell says, this is the only March 6th, 2012, we're ever going to get, so let's make it count. And that's why we're here tonight. That's why Joe's here on his birthday. That's why Doris was at a meeting last night, just 3 days after her husband dies. I always believed in a power greater than myself. it says on page 10. And that was my case. Only recently did I believe in God. I mean, I always believed in a God. I always believed in some God. But I didn't really believe in God. You know, what I believe is the creator, the author and the finisher of the big book, the beginner in the morning and the ender at night. I always believed in whatever God it was of the flavor of the month, usually in a skirt. I always believed in something, but it was never something like the Almighty God. It was never something where I could say, wow, there's a creator out there, according to the big book, that cares about me. He's my father. We are his children. Now, sometimes when I say that in meetings, people get upset because they're used to hearing higher power. But I just want to tell you something. And you can use higher power. There's nothing wrong with that. But higher power is only mentioned 3 times. God is mentioned 416 times. So I go with that. Creator, Father, Spirit of the Universe. That's a good one. You can use Spirit of the Universe. That's in the big book of God. Anything we can use that helps us describe our relationship, what I believe is our loving Father. Because it says it on page 63. So, where was I going with all this? Ebby makes a decision to come and see Bill W. Ebby's sober. He's clear-eyed. Like Nick, when I finally saw you years after and you came to the store, and I was clear-eyed. And it wasn't like we were going to go get tight that night. Because I had already had 5 years. I had already made a decision. So Bill sees Ebby. I know it's warm. I know. Just take it easy. Just pretend. Just visualize that you're on an ice glacier. Just visualize that. Okay? And you're drinking iced tea, not Long Island. Just visualize that. And you'll be fine. On page 12. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. So his old friend comes in. He's like, listen, we were both helpless drunks. I mean, these guys were real drunks. I don't know if you've ever seen the Bill W. story, or My Name is Bill W. They must show you guys that. Do you show these guys, John? My Name is Bill W. You got to show these guys, these movies. These guys were real drunks. I mean, they were like one step away from raincoat drunks. I mean, these are real drunks. They would rather drink than eat. To me, that's serious drinking. You know what I mean? Rather, because I love to eat. But they would rather drink than eat. They were bona fide, dyed-in-the-wool alcoholics. And Ebby was bad. Steve has a friend, and many of us know her. She came and spoke at our group. Steve, what is her name? That was friends with Ebby. Tommy, right?
Tommy D.
And he was bad. And now he goes and he meets Bill, and he's sober. And he says to Bill, I've got religion. And he's sober. And Bill, he's drunk. Or he's trying to get drunk. And he realizes this could really ruin the high. This is going to be a buzzkill. This is not going to be where they're going to do drinking games and talk about the old days. This is one guy coming to his house sober and says to him the 3 words you don't want to hear when you're trying to get wasted. I've got religion. Not what he wants to hear. But he thinks that maybe he's cuckoo, but maybe the alcohol will last longer than his guys talk. And he listens to Ebby. And Ebby tells him he's got religion, tells him he found God, and then this is why I wanted to bring this up. And then what happens? Ebby talks about making a decision to find God, making a decision to turn his life over to God, and then Ebby stays sober. This is why I really want you guys to hear this, regardless of how hot you are. This is so important. And then Ebby stays sober the rest of his life, right? Wait, hold on a second. Let me back up for a second. Ebby comes in. He 12 steps Bill W., the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. He tells him he's found religion. He's sober for the first time in his life. He hadn't had a drink in 2 months. He says to Bill W., I've got religion. I've found the power, the greatest power, the God of the universe, the whole deal. And then he stays sober one day at a time the rest of his life, right?
No.
He's drunk within 2 years. See, in step three, we only talk about one part of step three, making a decision. We talk about made a decision. We don't talk about making a decision. You see, we talk about that we made a decision to turn our life and our wills over to the care of God. But what we don't talk about is making the decision. I had a friend that was on fire for God. I mean, totally on fire for God. I mean, he had been through all different trainings, and he knew all different things, and he knew verses, and he knew scripture, and he was on fire for God, totally on fire for God, and he drank again. Can anybody relate to that in here? Is there anybody that this might have happened to? You might have heard a story about it. You might have seen it. You see, Ebby brings us the program, and then he gets drunk again. He made a decision to turn his life and will over to the care of God, but gets drunk again. That's what I want to share with you, brothers and sisters, and who I want to share with you tonight, is making a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God is a daily decision. Daily. It's like, I woke up this morning, I got down on my knees, I said to God, I want you to have my life and my will today. Tuesday, March 6, 2012, take my life, I don't want it. And when we do that, we get 28 years of sobriety like Mike did. We go to be in the kingdom sober. Or we just make a decision like three frogs on a log. Yes, I'm going to use it. We make a decision. We think that it's going to just carry us into the future. And that's it. We do step three. I love when I hear this. I've done step three. Steve, I don't need to come to the talks. I've done step three. Done. My sponsor gave me a form. I got a thing. I checked off some stuff on the form. It says, are you God? No. Do you believe that there might be a God? Yes. Have you turned your life and your will over to him? Yes. You check it and you're done. I want to say to you that I made a step three decision today. That I believe in permanent sobriety. Permanent sobriety. Young people, I want you to hear this. I believe in permanent sobriety one day at a time for the rest of my life. Making a decision today. I believe I will never take a drink again. Never. If I take care of today. I don't mean tomorrow. Tomorrow is not promised. It's a total today decision. Now we have this thing called the third step prayer. Not thing. We have a prayer called the third step prayer. And the third step prayer helps us to direct ourselves into what the third step, the spirit of the third step, is all about. The third step prayer goes like this. Exactly. Exactly. That's my man. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, so that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them would bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We say that prayer. We give it to God. It's on page 63. If you don't know it, write it down. Then it also says if you can't get the whole entire thing, don't stress. If you can't get it verbatim, word per word, don't stress. Do the best you can. Sometimes the third step prayer goes like this. God, take this. I can't handle it. Sometimes the third step prayer goes like this. God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me. Sometimes the third step prayer goes like this. Please help me. You're in charge. I'm not. And sometimes the third step prayer just says, help. Because on page 63, and this is, and then we're going to end here. Well, I'm not going to end here. Take it easy. Hold on. On page 63, and this is what I wanted you to hear, and those of you that have been to Step Series with me before, or other people, or Fred, I'm sure, went through this. This is it. This is the whole book. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in the drama of life, that God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone, which means the whole deal, the important piece, the part that without it, nothing else gets built. Without this keystone, the building's going to fall. This is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch that we pass through to freedom. If you didn't understand any of the stuff that I just said, or maybe you just weren't grasping it, wouldn't you at least like to have some freedom? I don't know about you, but when I was getting drunk, I always wanted to be what? Stress-free. I always wanted to have less feelings. I always wanted to have some freedom from the ideas of the world. And yet when I would take a drink, the drink would take me, I would be anything but free. I was always in bondage to alcohol. And of course, when I say alcohol, I mean any substance that I would take, and I tried them all, even stuff that was reinvented in a bathtub from a guy named Joe with two chemicals that I buy in Home Depot. I tried it. And I always thought that it would give me some freedom, and instead it made me a slave. I always believed that alcohol was going to be its master, and it turns out it was my master. I always thought that alcohol was going to be my ticket to serenity, and it turned out to be my ticket to bondage. So this, it says, this is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. And then I'm going to end with this. Oh. Yes. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, he provided what we needed. If we stayed close to him and performed his work well. Your life's not working right now, and I don't mean you're just coming off drinking and drugging. That's going to be normal. But your life's not working. You've been sober for a while. Your life is not working. You're wondering why you don't have happy, joyous, and free. You wonder why you're not walking around with a skip in your step. You wonder why you're just hanging on, and you're walking in meetings, and your face is miserable, and people say, how you doing? You're like, I'm hanging on. And you want to know why that is? Yeah. You want me to tell you why? Yeah. I mean, it's like preaching to the choir, because nobody here is miserable. But if you when you do get miserable, because you will. Life is but an ebb and flow. It's like the ocean that comes in and out. You're going to have some times where you're going to be miserable. You're going to go to a meeting miserable. Because does everybody go to a meeting happy? I go to a meeting miserable sometimes. Thank God we don't all show up miserable at the same time. You're going to go to the meeting miserable. You're going to wonder why you have this thing. You're going to start calling it names because you're all amateur psychiatrists. I have depression. I have bipolar. I have situational depression. Oh, you're going to start diagnosing yourself. That way we don't need these professionals that are sitting over here that charge too much. And guess what? It's none of those, or maybe it's some of those. I'm not a clinical psychiatrist, but sometimes you know what it is? It's just that you're not staying close to him and performing his work well. That's all it is. You're just not staying close to him and performing his work well. You're like out in some oasis by yourself, praying to God for 30 seconds. You brush your teeth for longer. You pray to God 30 seconds in the morning. You floss longer than you do, God. So you say to God in the morning, please keep me sober, and you give him your life like in 30 seconds. Then you spend an hour in the restroom, but you only spend 30 seconds with God. Then at the end of the day, because you heard it in a meeting, you get down on your knees, and you give God another 30 seconds, which it took you 2.5 minutes to brush your teeth. So you gave God a total of 60 seconds in the day, and you're wondering why the day was a little bit stressful. You're wondering why you have some issues going on. You're just going to go back to this part in step 3, and you're going to see this one line, and you're going to remember tonight. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Thanks for letting me share.
pass the baskets and approach the self-supporting.